So, Trey, tell our listeners a little bit about yourself and how you ended up working in SEL.
Hey, friends. Thanks for listening. My name is Phil Brown, and this is Vertical Playpen.
I used to believe that I needed to be someone to actually be someone. Everyone else seemed to get it right. But now I'm the cool kid, all weird, not chasing superficial things, that's clear. Ooh, I've got cool friends, ditch trends, they always see through them. That's why I am rich. Though I got no money, no. I am rich. Isn't it funny, though?
Well, I'll do a brief history of coming up in school. I went to 8 different schools by the time I finished high school, and we moved 11 different times. So I had to learn to connect with people quick and very often. And so even today is something that I think is a gift for me, something that I've been blessed with, to connect with people and have those sort of communication skills. But I'm born and raised in South Bend, Indiana. I was an athlete at first. And even in kindergarten, they said I was going to be a child psychologist or a baseball player. They were very close because I studied psychology in college and I played football. So pretty close. And it's in school and at Miami, Ohio, where psychology really opened up my eyes a lot. I went in thinking I was going to do abnormal counseling psychology, but I also realized I wasn't about to go to school for 6 more years after I finished my bachelor's. So I studied a lot of judgment and decision-making, actually, performance pressure, and also did a lot of social psychology at a minor in management and leadership. And that just helped me be very well-rounded along with the global perspectives. And when I studied abroad, my last semester of college, decided not to play a 5th year of football and decided instead to go and spend my last semester of college in Europe. And when I tell you, Phil, that semester in college changed my life, it made the world flat for me. You know, I had been to Australia in high school, but being able to go to another country or another continent and be able to travel freely and realize that the things are still the same over here, people are still living the same way and all that, just made the world very flat for me. So once I came back and graduated, I decided to move to South Carolina, which is a 12-hour drive from my hometown, in a town with about 8,000 people and not much going on. I call it the Twilight Zone. But because of that, there was nothing but opportunity. I was working at a residential high school, actually in student affairs. I was a residence life coordinator. And that's where I started to pick up a little more on SEL. And just, I lived with 45 junior and seniors, 17, 18-year-olds on campus. And so I really got to know them. And they were geniuses. This was a STEM school, a state-funded STEM school that, you know, the parents of diplomats went there. A lot of wealth, very prodigious folks, but they were still so lacking in some of their basic SEL skills. And so that's where we had conversations and tried to give them different experiences and opportunities to learn outside themselves. And so that parlayed into my speaking career. I spoke a lot with Toastmasters in their World Championship of Public Speaking, over 100 schools and audience members, and then started consulting with the Gamage Consulting Group. And so for the past 3 years or so, I've been providing professional development for teachers, been emotional coach for teachers, and helping schools implement SEL programs. And that has parlayed once more into a Dean of Students opportunity here at the PD Math Science and Technology Academy, a K-12 rural Title I charter school. We got about 220 kids. So it's amazing. It's a blessing. And SEL has truly been a godsend for me. You know, again, psychology, emotional intelligence, SEL. SEL is emotional intelligence for education. And then emotional intelligence is pretty much psychology at a lower level. So there's kind of been a slow progression to narrowing down to what do I really love? What do I really want to do? And for me, at first, it was all about just motivation and inspiration. But motivation doesn't last. People actually need skills. They actually need to practice these things in, you know, or else my speech or what I'm doing is going to wear off by the time the day is over.
what specifics about the travel and traveling in Europe, was there like a transformational moment that occurred for you or some sort of incredible learning?
I'd say one, I mean, there's so many of them. I mean, we travel to a different country every weekend. And so I think that access, you know, though that's a key access. And you talk about experience-based learning. I've been other places, done a lot of things, but going to have access to 14 countries in 4 months was amazing. But in particular, it was in Florence, Italy. I sat down at a restaurant right below the Michelangelo Piazza, and I was eating the pizza, and I called my dad. That was amazing to me. That as simple as it is, that was so simple. I was just like, wow, I'm living a real life dream right now. And I know my dad had always wanted to go to Italy. That connection there, like, man, I'm halfway across the world. I'm in Italy and I can just pick up the phone and call my dad. What else do I have access to? You know, opportunities are unlimited in this world. And that was something that just kind of opened my eyes to it. I think along with that trip to Italy, I spent 9 days in Italy by myself. And so typically we traveled in packs, but to know that I can navigate a foreign country and continent on my own, where I don't even know the main language, and just enjoy and be with myself. I mean, that was so amazing. The third piece of it is just not having access. I didn't have like a data plan. That was before you could just turn on your data plan in another country. So most of the time I didn't have access to Wi-Fi on my phone. So I was really taking everything in. And so that whole, I got to experience it all, you know, and take it all in without any distractions.
I was recently interviewing Chip Wood. I don't know if you're familiar with Chip. He made one statement that really stuck to me. He said, academics and SEL are one and the same thing in schools. You can't have academia without having SEL. Is that something you see in the work you do?
Without a doubt, man. So similarly, and I think this continues to speak to the connection and parallels, at least through podcasting. I had Maurice Elias on my podcast, and he's the social emotional character development director at Rutgers University. And they have a whole lab that they do. And in his interview, he said, SEL is to education as the alphabet is to reading. You can't have one without the other. And so that was the same kind of experience there. And when you look at, if you look at the World Economic Forum and they look at job skills, job responsibilities, 8 out of the top 10 skills you need to be successful, and I'm putting quotations up, in the work field have to do with emotional intelligence, which is SEL competency. So these skills to be able to navigate life. And even when I started, my first role as a consultant was as an emotional coach for teachers. And the first thing that I recognized when I started going and visiting classrooms is that teachers were reacting rather than responding to what was happening in their classroom. And what I mean by that is as soon as something disrupts your attention or your lesson, you throw your lesson aside and you attack this kid or you address this student in a way that doesn't just disrupt you or the kid, but the whole class. Instead, how do we respond? And I felt like that came from a place of baggage that you don't know you have, of bias that you don't know exists, or blind spots that you can't see. And so that's when another kind of click or trigger came for me, like, hey, I love students so much, but if I can't connect with the teachers and they can't connect with the students, this isn't going to work. So, and that's where the systematic SEL approach comes. And that's why I'm taking an approach of school-wide SEL implementation, because even just at that classroom level is good. And don't get me wrong, you should, if your school isn't on board with school-wide, you should absolutely have those components. But the systematic approach from a school-wide lens, it does wonders of magic for the rest of your school community.
Well, that's why, you know, I love the work that I do as a trainer, because it's the exact same role. It's working with the educators mm-hmm. that can then work with the kids, because mm-hmm. and we do a lot of program with the kids for our Agile Leadership program, but we also make sure that the teachers are a component participant in the program. It's not we're taking over for you. This, we've got this substitute person's going to do this SEL program and then we leave. That it has to be systemic all the way around, that everyone's a part of it and everyone's bought into it. And that's a harder part, but that's the way it was going to work. Otherwise, it's literally Trey's coming in or Phil's coming in, and it's like, mm-hmm. all right, goodbye.
And it's done.
And it's done. Yep.
And it's not worth it. And you know, we may come back to this or dive deeper on it now, but I've recognized as well in my SEL research that there's not much programming for adult SEL. You know, I love the experience-based aspect and how you're able to provide the adult SEL through the experience learning. But then when I see research that shows that adults that have SEL competencies are able to teach and model better for their kids. But when I research adult SEL programs or adult SEL curriculum or adult SEL training, not much comes up, you know, explicitly. And so that's been an area where I've started to focus even more and narrowing down, and not just SEL or even school-wide, but I'm going to focus on adult social emotional learning, because those are pieces where I've had teachers say, hey, I thought SEL was just for kids. Like, how could you think that? Like, these are life skills right here. But I think that's a component that's often missed. And there's some programs coming out now, and I've started a platform as well called SEL Educators that is dedicated 100% to adult SEL. And we've got 5 courses now, and we're going to be continuing to add courses there. But I think that component is one that we often miss. And so I'm glad High Five is doing that, you know, and I'm looking to start doing even more of that on a digital platform now as well.
Yeah, I'm always amazed. Like, I'm wearing a T-shirt that says play because, like, that's what I do for a large component of my work. And and it's seen as play is an act that a child does. The play in the adult world, play is more, you know, we can actually play a soccer game, or it's a really controlled. It's not playful in what the definition could be of play. I teach people that what I would really like an educator to be is not childish, but childlike. So they understand like how, what it's like to be a child and actually immerse in the world of a child, because it's a super fun space to be in, but there's also so much information you get from that. But what do you think from, as you were referencing the adult SEL, why isn't there already stuff for adults in this? What's holding back adults from entering into the SEL world? Is there an arrogance? There's an assumption of knowledge. What is it?
I think that there's such an emphasis on the kids and the standards and everything else that so many times we just think of SEL as an add-on, as something additional or something extra, but it's the missing piece. SEL is to education as the alphabet is to reading. And so from what I've seen, most of the research is done for kindergarten through second grade, those primary years. And so even when we look at middle school and high school, there's not a lot of research. There's not a lot of data that says, and it's still, when we're thinking about the systematic and data-driven approach, we're still looking at and coming up with new ways to measure the success of SEL. So I think the emphasis has been on K-12. In this quarantine, I've heard more in the last 5 months about SEL than I had in the previous 5 years of my career. Every platform, and maybe part of this is because I'm in the industry now and I'm looking for these things, but it seems like every other platform is putting that emphasis on SEL. And now we recognize that connection comes before content, but I don't think that was true before then. And going back, and you might get me on a tangent here, because our colleges don't teach SEL. You may have one classroom management class, but they're focused on pedagogy. And then when teachers come out of school and they go into the classroom, they got their pedagogy, but you don't know how to connect with your kids. You never played Ubuntu. You never heard about SEL. And I saw a study, I think it's from Castle, asked the Aspen Institute. Most colleges will only teach one or two of the core 5 Castle competencies of SEL. And I think it's self-awareness and self-management. So the other competencies, that they're not even talked about in a university curriculum. So I think we're just missing that. And the emphasis has been on the kids initially, as it should be. But I think if you want to reach teacher or reach students, you have to teach the teachers.
I was reading and I watched a video that you had on your website where you talked about bridging the gap, and you talked about being a millennial, and then also there's a role modeling of bridging those two components together, bridging the gap. Speak a little bit to that. Like, what did you mean when you referenced bridging the gap?
So I felt like that was at a time when I was actually running for city council in Hartsfield, where I live, again, small town. And I just felt very connected. That was right after Donald Trump got elected. In just complete transparency, I didn't vote. I didn't think it mattered. I thought the election was stupid. And that was like, that was a wake up call for me too. Like, okay, I made a mistake. Let me try to fix it. I'm going to go. And I saw the deficits in my community. I saw the deficit between black and white. I saw the deficit of rich or poor. I saw the deficit of old or young. And I feel like that I've been blessed with a ability to connect between those generations, where when I come on a campus, I love kids and they love me too, you know, and I think that they can feel my childish motivation when I'm speaking with them, but also I'm not talking to them like they're kids. And I don't know if you have a copy of my book, but it's written very personably, and it's written to a person first. Every chapter was written as a letter to an individual and not a blanket statement. And at the same time, I feel like I'm able to hear what our youth are saying and understand what our youth are trying to say and translate that language into our elders. So I'm in a position now where most of the people that I work with at school on the city council are 20 years my senior. And at the same time, while I'm on campus, like with the kids, they're 10 years my junior. So everybody's either 10 years younger than me or 15 to 20 years older than me. And I'm in the middle. Like I'm bridging that gap. And so that's kind of where that came from. How do we connect these dots and make it so we can pass this torch between generations? And I don't know how much we want to go into generations, but it's getting more important now because I'm going to use the word power has skipped a generation. Or two generations for that matter. You've got your baby boomers who were the largest generation in the history of the world due to the wars and lasted, you know, 20 years. And I don't even know how many people were baby boomers, baby boomer one and two, but their kids, Generation X, there was much less of. So baby boomers are between the 40s and the 60s. So between 65 and 1980, it was very small because women started going to work and both parents were working. So people were having less kids and smaller families. So that generation is a fraction of the size as the baby boomers. But those people had the millennials. So you got baby boomers, you've got Generation X, then you have Y or the millennials. That was the largest generation. But now you're looking at a situation where the structures and the systems that we have in the world skipped from baby boomers. Generation X did not get much passed down because our baby boomers are still in power and they won't let go of the keys to the gate. But now millennials are here and we're the largest. And Gen Z, our kids in school now and the first crop are starting to graduate, they're even bigger than millennials. So now we're facing a significant turnaround where power shifts from baby boomers all the way down to millennials and Generation Z. And because there's that gap, that means there's going to be some things missing. That's why there's so much social unrest, because there was a generation where the information didn't get passed on. The gap wasn't bridged. And that's the gap. The 15 years of that generation is a gap that hasn't been bridged. And that's one of the big reasons why there are so many gaps in pick a system that there's a problem in. That's the reason why, if you ask me.
The title of the book is Every Decision Counts, 8 Lessons I Wish They Taught Me in School. Speak to that a little bit. What do you mean by every decision counts?
Every decision counts. It stems from a idea or a concept that one of my football coaches in college talked to us about. And this might be my junior year of college, and he put on the board two dates. He put, you know, today, August 1st, and then September 31st, which was our first game. I'm just making those up. And he said, what's the most important? He put a dash in the middle. He said, what's the most important thing on this board? We all said today. We all said game day. And he was like, nope, it's this dash right here in the middle. And this dash is the marathon of life. It's from the day you're born to the day you die. If you think about it, you don't remember anybody that you know that's passed because of you don't remember their birthday. You remember the day they passed. You remember how they made you feel while they were here. You remember those memories. And it's also the short term. Every day you're building your dash. So it's the long term legacy, but it's also the decisions that you make on a daily basis that compound to become your life. And so every decision counts. I failed a drug test in college. And it came at a point where I wasn't worried about my decisions. I was struggling in college. I was on the bench playing football. My girlfriend had cheated on me. I was missing my family. And I said, man, forget it. I don't care. I'm just going to smoke and see what happens. And I got drug tested and I failed that drug test. And this $50,000 scholarship was now up in the air and I didn't know what to do. Fortunately, the school knew my heart. I was able to get a warning. I had to go see a psychologist, a sports psychologist. But that was the beginning of the idea for the book. But moving onward after that, I kept on realizing it was a speech. I ended up giving that speech at Toastmasters World Championship of Public Speaking. And when I started my podcast, it was as a way to add value consistently for free. And I know you know this as a podcaster. For me, it's an excuse to reach out to people, have conversations, and really get these coaching sessions, because I get to ask you all the questions about what led you to be successful or how you avoided failure. And as I was going through my podcast episodes, I was like, wow, these are some amazing stories that are here. How failing is your first attempt at learning, and it's actually what gets you started. Or how there was this guy in chapter two who, he was a drug dealer. He was about to get caught up on a federal RICO charge, racketeering, drugs, extortion, all that. Ended up getting the charges dropped and graduating with as the valedictorian of his high school. And now he's one of the top athletic trainers in the city. Another chapter about only quality people. This was a man that I competed with in Toastmasters World Championship. He was homeless. He was an Army veteran who ended up homeless on the streets, almost killed himself, and then came back by starting an insurance company out of a crack motel. And now he is a presenter and he teaches people how to pitch their business. So there's just so many lessons in that I learned from life, from going to eight schools and moving 11 different times, from talking to these people. There's so many life lessons that I was taught that I really should have been taught in school, and I wasn't.
Last point before I let you go, and then we'll get into also where people might be able to find more about you. In the current climate, we've got the COVID outbreak, we've got discussions around equity, and there's a lot of discussions that need to be had, I feel, especially at the educational level. Do you think this is maybe SEL's time to shine? Do you feel like this is our time to startly have some impact in stuff that happens?
100%. If SEL is not a part of your school's plans and you don't have a plan for SEL, you're behind. I think the times of being an early adopter for SEL are over. And, you know, now it's going to become much more of a trend. It has to, you know, because I believe in the person coming first, and you have to develop the talents, the tools, the resources that currently exist. And even before the mortgage and the finances, we got to teach people. Okay. And people are going through things right now, and SEL is a way to fix that. And so I absolutely think that, you know, people don't know that SEL Castle, one of the founders in America, started in 1990. And I mentioned Maurice Elias. He started his research on character development at SEL in the 70s. So SEL is not new, but it's finally getting over that hump. And so I'm uber excited, because every school that I've talked to, and I've had calls, I did a training last week on some SEL, and before, people were doing SEL just to check that box off their list and let their district know, hey, we had SEL training, go ahead and scratch this off. But now I feel like people really care, and I feel like it's necessary and it's important. So I 100% agree, now is the time for SEL to shine, and it should be a part of your back to school plans, and not just the start of school, but throughout the entire year.
Well, awesome. Thank you, Trey. And hopefully people who listen to this are inspired by what you're saying and the other stuff that we say. Guys, I agree. I think it's so, so important right now. Just to wrap up, how am I, anyone who's listening to this who is interested to connect with you further, how can they find you?
Of course. So you can find me at Trey Gammage, TREGAMMAGE, on LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And you can also visit my website, treygammage.com. And if you're looking for some skill building, you can go to seleducators.com. We've got four courses out right now. One of the most popular one is 3 restorative SEL practices to use in your classroom. There's adult SEL self-assessment. There's a course about how to build a teacher mastermind, how to set 90-day goals, and how to get unstuck. We'll be rolling out courses every month for the rest of 2020. And I'm excited to continue to help folks with their social emotional learning activities.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Trey.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate the time.
Thanks for listening to Vertical Playcast.
And then what about thanks for listening to High Fives Podcast?
Can you do it?
Okay, try.
Thanks for giving Vertical Playcast a guy.